Welcome to the Spirituality of Strength Training with your host, Anna Willard. This podcast is dedicated to bring you knowledge, wisdom, inspiration, and guidance to wherever you may be on your health journey. For those who are new to me, I am a kettlebell strength coach, a movement nerd ninja, and an empowerment coach on a mission to bring you hope through our health. The root word of health comes from wholeness. The root word of wholeness comes from holy. Despite our differences with religion and spiritual beliefs, we are all human beings with a body that is designed to reflect this holiness through our health. It wasn't until my seventh year as a health profession where I went into a deep awakening of understanding what does it mean to train my spirit and to heal my spirit through the physical. You'll hear a little bit more about my story from other health professionals, from strength coaches, psychiatrists, spiritual gurus and leaders, to other people who talk about the importance of our health as a community body and the health of our planet as well. This podcast is to allow us to step into our whole health, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Thank you for being here. If you love what you hear, I encourage you to subscribe. If you want more inspiration and quotes from these podcasts, I encourage you to follow me on Instagram at @Anna_Willard_. I encourage you to do a little bit of a movement, either a yoga flow, go for a walk, sit in nature, as you enjoy this episode. Hey, Strong Ones, thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Allison Teeny. She is a passionate soccer player, a strength coach, SFG certified kettlebell instructor, and owner of Allison Teeny Fitness. She believes in lifting up women, breaking out of the standard society box, acknowledging systematic oppressions for a better world. With that vision in mind, Allison has founded the Ignite Women Summit, an annual wellness and leadership event that creates a space for learning through inclusive lens. Allison is here to share her story and news on her Truly Transformation Summit. She's an advocate for removing barriers and surrounding health, strength, and finding your own voice. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna. I'm so honored to be here with you.
Oh, it's just like a blast to have you on the show, and it's good to see your face.
It's good to see you too.
Yeah. Now we have the big Ignite Women's Summit. This is the third year of that. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit more what started this event for you, and then how has it evolved?
Oh man. So gosh, we're coming up on 3 years, and you know, the events started really, I had been going to a lot of different fitness events, just trying to expand my own community and really meet more people. I had just started my business online, and it was really diving into the online fitness space and meeting so many wonderful women at all these different conferences. And from there, the whole election happened, the whole Trump thing happened. And I feel like a lot of women were very upset, very shocked in a way that was shocking for like white women to like wake up and be like, oh, look what's happening around us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women started finding their voice, wanting to use their voice, really step into their power. And it was this combination of really wanting to be in action around those things and finding my own powerful community and wanting to bring that into the spaces that I was in, which was in Seattle. And literally just had this idea, like, my gosh, I know some pretty freaking rad women.
Yeah.
Why don't I just do this? And I know, like, I feel like whenever I hear myself say that, I'm always like, gosh, it sounds so like trite. Like, oh, I just had an idea and I decided to do it. Like there was a lot of, there's a lot of work involved there.
Right. Yeah.
That was kind of the start of it, of like, hey, I kind of have this idea. I had some conversations with some women in my community that were like, yeah, that sounds cool. You should do that.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started like kind of poking around, seeing, hey, could I find a space? Who could I invite? What would this actually look like? It really started to take shape and take form, and it just kind of snowballed. It just really took off.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So now,
the first year.
Yeah. Go into the details of like, yeah. How has this evolved to what it is for this year?
For year three. So for year one, it really was me just texting three amazing women who really inspired me and who I knew, and them texting me back and being like, sure, we're in.
Nice.
And it was great. Like it was all rah-rah woman power.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, I definitely received some feedback that was very jarring for me and that was very confronting for me. It was really hard to take, but I really invite feedback in. Mm-hmm. And so when I got that feedback, that basically it was a women's event that wasn't aimed at all women. It was, it was really lacking in some areas. And when I look back at it, like, yeah, it was kind of one of those like, you tried to please everybody and you can't please anybody type of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really so like focused on like, everybody's welcome and let's empower women. And it wasn't, and it left a lot of voices out because I had blind spots around who I was talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought like, cool, let's talk to women and empower women. But you can't just blanket statement that and pump it out and think that you're actually speaking to all women. Those aren't my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I left a lot of voices out unintentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was brought to my attention, it really shifted a ton of things in my world. And it made me embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me kind of dig in to what that was for me. And it sent me on this path of learning and exploration in a way more structured sense.
Mm-hmm.
I sought out some teachers to do my own learning and to really dig into like what that was for me.
Mm-hmm.
So to be quite honest, I wasn't sure if I was going to do year two. So I was like, oh my gosh, like I missed all these big pieces. And sure, it was this great event for year one, but was kind of like it came and went and, you know, people gave me some good fluff feedback. But it was really doing that work between year one and year two that I really changed things for year two. And I was way more intentional, around those conversations and where my place was in those conversations.
Mm. Can you maybe dive in a little bit more on the details of what you're referring to the type of work that that you had to do between year one and two? Cause I think I can relate, not on a bigger scale of an event, but just some of the smaller conversations that I have had and, knowing when to speak up and when to not and give the floor to someone else or to speak up because of someone else and give them that voice. Can you go into a little bit more detail of what exactly work you're talking about?
Yeah. So, you know, the feedback from my event was that I really left out women of color specifically, that all three speakers were white women. And while their experiences were very different, one of Lori Lindsay was a big advocate for the LGBTQ community. I had really left out women of color. And it forced me to look at some very close relationships in my life. Mm. My best friend is Black. Mm. Like, holy shit. Like, how can you Which sounds, again, like it sounds so ridiculous saying out loud, but yeah. How can you have close relationships like that and not be talking about race? Mm-hmm. Like if you have women in your life, friends in your life that are, you know, Black or a different race than you, and you're not talking about these things, like mm-hmm. that's a huge piece that's being left out. And it was totally left out for me. And I totally fell back on the heels of like, I'm a good person. And it just is so like this broad overview mm-hmm. of some very deep traumas that can come out for people. Mm-hmm. And to dig into that looked like conversations where I had to really listen mm-hmm. to friends and listen to their experiences and not insert myself and not add my story on top of it and not bring my own stuff to the table because even though I'm a woman, I'm not a woman of color. Yeah. And they're going to experience racism and oppression on a much different level than I am as a privileged person. Mm-hmm. And so it was this year of really learning what my privilege looked like, which is a hard thing to do. Racism is a harder thing to do. Mm-hmm. Like, let's be very clear about that. Mm-hmm. But when you wake up to your own privilege and how that shows up for you and how it shows up in your life and in these important relationships and people that you say you really care about, mm-hmm. it shifts. It mm-hmm. like shifts your worldview. So for me, it was a lot of fucking Googling. like I can't tell you, like people like laugh at Google, but like I don't Google like shit white people say, and how come this is bad? Like Googling stuff all the time for my own like frame of reference, because mm-hmm. I just had no idea. And like, how could I not know these things and stuff that I can take responsibility for and go Google and do some learning and reading about and not have to re-traumatize and have people around me educate me on things that they've experienced their entire life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you said is as not inserting yourself with their story. I think mm-hmm. that's the most challenging part is because mm-hmm. we also like as myself, I also feel like I need to be heard. But at the same time, like their voice has been silenced longer than mine and giving them their space and time to share their story. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in grad school, I had a woman, we became really good friends right away. And she was of a mixed color. So her mom was white and her dad was Black. And she was just telling me of just like the day to day in and out type of stuff that she dealt with. And I still had no idea of what she was being called. She gave me an example, like if I wanted to go to the bank and get a loan for a business, how much money I possibly could get just because of my color and how she could probably still get money, but not the same amount. And for me, that was so mind-blowing because in my thought process, we've given them that opportunity, but that's been where I have been raised up by that white, I don't know what you would call it, the superior over or that power over. Yeah. And so it's learning how to, I was at a speaker's workshop and it was led by a white woman. And one of the first things that she said and just like hit me like hardcore in the heart. Mm. She talked about how much it's annoying for us when men interrupt us and don't give us that chance to speak. And she's like, remember that. And that's what we do to our colored sisters. Mm-hmm. And we need to let them have the ground. And she had this amazing drill at the end. And I have to remind myself of this constantly, of my role for other women. But she talked about how when someone's interrupting or not giving them a voice or shutting them down, of how we need to say, excuse me, she's not done talking.
Yeah.
And went around the room and practiced that. And it was fascinating for me because during that time, we partnered up and we just interviewed each other. And the woman who I partner up, she was losing her voice. And so I made sure like I touched every bass, and she was of color, great woman. But it was weird because at the end, when she interviewed me, she could barely talk. And it was one of those things of like, oh, this is my role. This is my role, is to help direct the spotlight to them. And I think you have done such a great example of transitioning from the first one. I wasn't able to attend the first one, but I was able to attend the second one. Mm-hmm. And just seeing the difference of the type of women that you brought in and the topics that were spoke about, mm-hmm. of how that has changed. Again, I wasn't able to go to the first one, but the second one, I could see that difference within the inside compared to the outside.
Yeah. And I think when you start talking about systems of oppression, there's so many different levels and layers to mm-hmm. that. And once you start dismantling those for yourself on an individual level, you really start seeing them on a systematic level, all around you in society, like all of these systems of oppression mm-hmm. interplay in a way that is wild. Mm-hmm. And once you figure out where you are, like me as a white woman, I might feel oppression as a woman, but as a white woman, it's different, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. I don't experience it being white. I might only experience it being a woman. So mm-hmm. a woman of color is now dealing with racism and sexism. Mm-hmm. So you start multiplying that across identities. Like that is deep. Mm-hmm. And figuring out where you are kind of on that spectrum, to me, has been very powerful to know where I can use my privilege, and know kind of how that shows up for me, mm-hmm. so that when I am planning this event, I know who to reach out to and who to talk to and where my checks and balances are, and where I fit into that equation. Mm-hmm. It's like, gosh, it's super nuanced. And you don't want to inadvertently re-traumatize people. And I think with year one, I probably did, for like the few women of color that were sitting in that room, where I'm like, yay, go women. And they're like, cool, but nobody here looks like me. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can recognize those things off of the bat, then you're not isolating certain groups of people.
Mm-hmm. Going into the fitness aspect, I think you made a post, maybe last week or something, about how fitness, or how fitness isn't available to everyone. And it's not all Lululemon. Mm-hmm. And it made me think of, I used to water ski down in North Carolina, and I used to work the kitchen with this woman called Miss B, and I just love her. Another Black African-American woman. I've actually gone to church with her and her family. Super fun. But it made me think of her and how, just living where she lives, the fact that to be fit is not affordable for them.
No. You have to think about what type of access people have to, I'm doing air quotes, like fitness. And mm-hmm. we fit, like, it's an industry, and people are trying to monetize fitness in general. And so when people hear the word fitness, they think, you know, thin white yoga model. Well, yeah. If you're not fitting into that thin white yoga model, then you have to go buy this program, get on this diet, hire this trainer, do all these things. And that costs money. And mm-hmm. that's the point. And if you don't have access to those things, and I'm talking about like basic human needs, right? Like not just money, but like, what about like your safety? Like if somebody doesn't feel safe walking down the street to the gym, or somebody doesn't feel safe in their body, like all these things that a lot of us take for granted, Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Like mm-hmm. fitness to me is movement in your body and people feeling safe to mm-hmm. do that in their body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Period.
And safety, I mean, you bring up a huge point. I mean, if someone doesn't feel safe within their body, their muscles are on guard. Yeah. So for them to move in a correct way that doesn't create any injuries in the long term, yeah. that's huge. That plays such a big role in the physiological, but also that mental aspect as mm-hmm. well of like, can we feel safe within our body? And I think the environment plays a huge deal with that. I know for myself with just my own personal story and my fitness career, there's some places where I'm like, nope. I'm not exercising here.
No.
And I recently just joined a membership at an athletic club and I went late at night and there was all these dudes. And I'm like, where do I hide? I like went to like the group studio where there was no lights on and I hid. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is awful. Is this how everyone feels all the time? This is why I have always almost had that aspect of running and hiding for my fitness.
Yeah.
And going back to my original question, where do you think with like the society and the economy of some families of color that don't have that price point or that mm-hmm. certain income mm-hmm. to develop that fitness, where is our role within that?
I think our role is talking about fitness and shifting that culture so that it's not just one narrow thing.
Mm.
If we're talking about fitness, why can't it be the mental health and the mm-hmm. physical safety of people?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you talk about like diet culture and fat phobia and all these things where we totally disregard humans and their worth and their sense of worth. I think fitness should be focused on the value that humans bring and how they're connected to their body. Like you are connected to this earth through this vessel that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're constantly shaming and shunning certain types of vessels, like you're never going to feel like you belong. And mm-hmm. that sense of belonging is critical.
Mm-hmm.
We're social beings. Humans want relationships. We want to connect. And we're so disconnected by false stories, false narratives, trying to, you know, one up and position against one another, that mm-hmm. creates all that disconnect. So I, instead of like drop, like talking about like price points and working for free or like doing anything like that, like I really think it's this shift in like what fitness is and how we talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think, I follow you on Instagram and I love your posts because they just are like that deep dive into some of these things, which is good. And it's encouraging.
It's good, but that doesn't get you a ton of engagement, let me tell you.
Well, let me just say that you have encouraged me because I've looked at my own stuff of what I've been posting. I'm like, am I talking about this? Because this is what I am passionate about, but am I actually giving voice to it? So I just want to say thank you and honor you for being that trailblazer in that regard of making those voices be heard and that changing the conversation about fitness. Now, one thing, this is something I've struggled with within the fitness industry is this concept of being better than, and that's kind of what you mentioned about going, being like up one or something like that. Yeah. As women in the fitness industry, how can we create more of that culture that encourages each other versus being better than or doing that one up aspect?
The compare trap. The compare trap is, you just can't get stuck there. It's so easy to go there.
It is.
Gosh, this is a really hard one. And I feel like I have no really good answer. For me, it starts with working on my own shit. Can I say that?
Mm-hmm, yep. We curse here. It's all good.
Okay, good. It really, it starts with working on my own stuff. Because whenever I feel like I'm comparing myself, or like I get really jealous of what my peers are doing, because I'm surrounded by like kick-ass women, mm-hmm. that I'm like, oh, I gotta keep up. I gotta be doing all these big things just like them. And it becomes this rat race or that hamster wheel in your brain, yeah. of never enough.
Yeah.
And to me, it's number one, recognizing that that's my story and mm-hmm. owning my piece of what I'm telling myself, you know, what that truth is. So can I kind of peel back those layers, figure out what my own insecurities are? And usually those are red flags of areas that I really need to look at and that I need to work on. Mm. So if I can start there, that really helps, mm-hmm. kind of dig myself out of that compare hole. And I just have, honestly, I've really curated who I follow, who I surround myself with. And it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Like the joy that the women that I surround myself with bring to my life is invaluable to me. Like mm-hmm. I know when I just was texting with my friend Jessica Orr yesterday, where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing on Instagram and nothing's working, and like stuff that I'm like telling myself. And right. I just like unloaded on her, and she's texting me back, and we've had conversations around our businesses. Like, you need women like that,
yeah.
that can help you and hold you and shine a light on like who you are and how you show up in the world, because mm-hmm. it's hard for us to remember that sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I think those two things really seeing what my triggers are, knowing when I'm triggered, and uncovering what it is for me, mm-hmm. unpacking that, and then surrounding myself with women who I know support me and I know will pick me up. Because Lord knows I need that sometimes.
Oh, you and me both on that one, right?
Well, we're so bad at like admitting that and mm-hmm. asking for that, because mm-hmm. we are so indoctrinated into like, I should be able to handle this and I should be able to figure it out, and this is what a strong person does, and I just can do everything all the time. And, oh my God.
And I can totally relate to that, because I'm like, I'm a coach. I can do this by myself. Like,
right?
And I just like,
hell no.
And then you're exhausted.
And you're exhausted and you're burned out, and you yeah. are of no service to the people that you want to serve. Mm-hmm. It just, yeah, it gets really, real sticky real quick.
Yeah. Now I'm going to kind of shift gears and talk about kettlebells, because you and me both have a big love for kettlebells.
That's how we connected.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am going to surprise you with a little quick origin story.
Okay.
I remember, gosh, I think we were doing our FMS. It was something at Kettlebility,
uh-huh.
where you currently work and train out of, but I had just started working with Andrea, who you had on the podcast before.
Yeah.
And I remember you walking in, and we hadn't formally met, but I remember you walking in, and I think you were like retesting for your SFG, but you had to do the snatch test.
Yeah.
And you had to do the snatch test in front of all of us. And yeah. there was probably a course of like, what, 20 or 30 of us that were working on our FMS, which is the uh-huh. functional movement screen. And I remember watching, and you had to, so for all of you that are listening, the SFG snatch test, like 16 kilogram 100 snatches in 5 minutes. And like, I remember watching you being like, I want to be her. I want to be a badass like that. Like, you busted them out with Andrea, who is like, she's no joke. Queen.
Yeah.
She's the form queen. Like, yeah. if you didn't pass, like, you would know right away.
Yeah.
I remember watching you and being like, just blown away by your strength and your calm and having all these eyes on you. It was amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That was a surprise. I wasn't anticipating that at all.
There you go. That's my first memory of you.
That's too good. Now, what brought you to kettlebells, or how were you introduced to kettlebells? Because you have a soccer background, right?
Yep. Soccer background. So I was coaching soccer and doing all the strength and conditioning for the soccer team as well. I was a collegiate strength coach. And gosh, you know, I was like heavy into doing certifications. I was doing my CSCS. I was getting my FMS and then probably watching you kill those snatches and being around Andrea was really encouraged to check out kettlebells. So I actually, which I'm sure in the SFG world, this is like a no-no. I went and got my RKC first because they were in Seattle. And so I just did that and then eventually got my SFG. But I just remember looking at those certification and I'm super competitive. And so I'm like, oh, that looks really hard. I'm going to try that.
Yeah. That's too good.
Yeah.
Now what, cause I know with following you on Instagram and everything, you are training differently though, without the kettlebells. Is that right?
Yeah. I, you know, it's funny. Kettlebells will be my, like my, always my go-to, right. My love, but I really like kind of being a fitness connoisseur. Like I love learning. I love trying new things. I did powerlifting for probably about 6 months. And now I just started doing Olympic weightlifting, which is like blowing my mind. It's totally new to me.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
That's awesome. Can you talk a little bit of, as a fitness instructor, how is it to learn a new skill?
Oh man. It kind of puts you in the mindset of like your clients, which I really love and appreciate. And I think that's such an important place to be because we forget what it's like to be a newbie, to be learning something that is complicated and nuanced and takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And gosh, okay, so Olympic weightlifting, there's all this like timing that's involved. And like, I'm not new to a barbell. Like my form is really good, but putting all those pieces together is really hard. And so it's funny, I can see my mentality of like, when I don't get it, I get really mad and I get really frustrated. Yeah. And I have a coach who programs for me at the gym and he's watching my form. So like coaches need coaches, like let's be super clear on that. And I still video myself and watch videos. So like it's, I want people to know that like video yourself, get a good coach when you're taking this stuff on. But it's been really interesting watching my mindset because like I'm working with an empty bar.
Oh, yeah.
45 pounds. So part of me is like, oh, I want to be lifting heavier. And I have all these shoulds in my head and I have to dial it back and be like, no, Allison, you need form. You need the basics. Mm-hmm. And so it's a good practice for me to be in the mindset of clients that I work with, anybody that's trying something new. And the language piece is really, really big to me. Understanding that your language matters, how you coach and communicate really, really matters. And I'm seeing all those things as I'm trying this new thing.
Yeah. You bring up a really good point that I think we all struggle with these shoulds. And I know like sometimes my mind will travel back and in the past of like, I should have made this decision, then this would lead me to here. And then I wouldn't be here. And then I wouldn't be dealing with this and then blah, 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 blah. And it just spirals effects or it goes into the future. I should be doing this now, but I'm not. And then it almost stumps me from actually moving forward. So with that concept of should, how do you get into those present moments with lifting?
With lifting, I feel like it's such an embodied movement for me that it's probably the only thing that puts me in my body immediately. That mind-body connection, I think, is amazing, which is why I love weightlifting for women, period, like full stop. Because I think we've kind of talked about this before, how disconnected we are from that mind-body thing that embodiment piece is super important to get that back. So for me, that's what weightlifting is. And when I step into the weight room, I think too, because my background is in athletics, like there's just that, like, I'm going to get after it and I'm going to use my body. And it's not really my time. Like it's time to like shut my brain off And I've always kind of been that way for soccer practice and for workouts in general. Like, I really just tap into, what am I doing? What's this movement? What's the workout? What body part needs to be bending and lifting, pushing and pulling?
Yeah.
And so it does kind of put me into my body, which we don't do like on a daily basis, which is kind of shocking that it takes a workout for me to do that. I know other people have breathing practices and meditation practices and different things, that dancing, you know, things that put them in their body. And I think having those practices is so, so important.
Yeah. There's one thing that I am really passionate about is like helping people understand the language of their body. Mm-hmm. How have you learned to listen to your body and honor your body with weightlifting?
Oh, with weightlifting.
Or in general.
I think it's something that I am like really in the middle of working on right now.
Mm.
I don't think I've been very good in the past tapping into that. My competitive spirit, so to speak, really kicks in, and I just try to like power through things. And that has been my go-to strategy. Like, I, you know, should all over myself and really power through. And I really, in the past, used workouts to, I guess, to deal with a lot of other things that would be going on in my life. And now I've shifted that mindset to, this is really to like workouts that are honoring my body. And I'm honoring that time for my mental health and my mental well-being. And I move how I want to move, which is why I like trying new things.
Yeah.
Because it's challenging my body to move in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I've added in more walks during the day just because I know, again, my like embodiment practice, I have to move. Like, I can't sit and like drop into my body. I have to be moving to like process thoughts and to process emotions. So now that I know that about myself, I've shifted away from workouts as like, oh, I want to, for me, I want to add muscle, I want to add weight. Like, I want, like, it's gotten more away from that like outcome based stuff to this is how I feel in my body. This is how I feel most powerful in my body. Mm. And I try to take that mindset shift into other aspects of my life.
Nice. What shifted for you? What from like kind of pushing your body to its limits of where it may not have been healthy to like really honor your body within your movement practice, either it be walking or weightlifting? What was the shift for you?
It was getting to a really bad place and not wanting to be in that bad place.
I
think when you're listening to like podcasts or listening to people talk about these things, it's almost like they just snap their fingers like, oh, I was in this bad place and I just decided not to be there anymore. Like, I had both of my girls and they're 18 months apart.
Mm.
And as somebody who identified way too heavily and had way too much of my self-esteem wrapped up in this athlete, look at my accomplishments through what my body can do. My body could not do that anymore, let me tell you. I got to this really bad place after having both of my girls, and it took me a while to dig myself out, to like detach it. Fuck, it took me tearing my fucking ACL. That's what it took.
Mm-hmm.
I had both of my girls, was trying to do all these like Tough Mudder things and play indoor soccer, and I tore my ACL. And it was like the universe, like, serious. I had to like really give me the major smackdown, give me this big injury to be like, enough. You are not your body. Stop.
Yeah.
And it was that ACL piece and coming back from the ACL and really just being more gentle with myself and honoring that process. That's where that shift really started to happen.
Nice. You're not the first one on the show who's mentioned a big injury, either it be people's backs or an injury like Yours, did you have to have surgery with that?
I did. I mean, that was like clean snap.
Oof.
That sucker was gone. I heard it. Like, you know, when people like talk, like actually like that's exactly what it sounded like.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, I knew.
Yeah. And I can relate because I've had, unfortunately, numerous injuries of getting back to a place that's honoring to my body. What advice do you have for people who may be in that spot right now with their life?
You won't be there forever. Mm-hmm. I think it feels very isolating. It feels like the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But to just have your team of people. I had a really great physical therapist. I had a really great doctor. My husband was right there with me. I had friends, Andrea, like I had my team.
Yeah.
And then knowing that you just won't be there forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
You mentioned about with your walks.
Mm-hmm.
How you kind of work through your emotions. And I know you made a post about your emotions and how similar we are, or to train them similar to how we train our body.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit more about that and the connection between our emotions and our body?
Yes. So the post was about emotional fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the two are super, super just interwoven.
Mm-hmm.
That working the physical body helps you strengthen that inner landscape, that emotional fitness. It makes you more resilient, so that when things pop up, you're able to process them instead of just react or internalize them. And for me, walking has been a practice of abundance and gratitude. So it's like I tried the whole like morning practice and journaling and like legit for like 2 years, people. Like I was like indoctrinated into this thought that like I should have a morning practice and that should be writing like Oprah does it. I should do it.
I love it.
Come on, Allison, get it together. And I was never consistent. I just couldn't do it. And for some reason, I walk my girls to school. We're really lucky. We live right behind the elementary school. And so now every morning when I drop my girls off, I take a little detour and it's like 5 extra minutes and I just walk. And I use it as like my abundance walk. And usually I'll try to think of like, if I want to create abundance in my home, abundance in my health, abundance in my business, abundance in my bank account, all these things that I want to create abundance around. What am I grateful for? Just like random, it can be anything really, but it's really helped me to set my intentions for whatever that day may be. And I found it to be very grounding and very helpful so that when stuff doesn't work out or my kids are off the wall or whatever, you know, shit happens,
mm-hmm.
I'm able to like take a breath. And for me, that's a big deal. Like I would fly off the handle at my kiddos or like an email that would like really rattle me and like shake me to the core of like, mm-hmm. But I, this isn't how it's supposed to go. And like, whatever it was. And now I can like detach a little bit from it. And it's just that like one breath, that one moment where I can compose myself and it's, it will be okay.
Yeah.
It's helped. The walking has helped.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a lot about just taking that breath. Because I know with kettlebells, we do a lot of breathing training with that. And I'm assuming it's similar to Olympic lifting. I dabbled in that very short time when I first started training. How does training with your breath help you with those like moments where maybe you would have been fired up, but kind of take that breath and calm yourself and get it back into your body?
We're constant, like, I feel like good coaches are talking about breathing in a way to help supplement and support your spine. And you want to really engage that diaphragm. And you talk about these mechanics of breathing for your lifting and for working out. So we know how to access it.
Mm-hmm.
But we access it in a way to help our lifts and not necessarily in a way to like connect to that inner being. And so for me, accessing that breath on a deeper level allows me to drop into my body in a way that's different than working out and different than supporting those lifts that I want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's power in both of those. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to rip that barbell off the floor for that massive deadlift, like, you have to engage that breath.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, like, I don't want to react in certain ways in my life and have anger and hostility and like all these like things that can be triggering.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be able to access that breath to calm myself. And there's all those benefits of breathing, in terms of whatever the hormones and the, what, I couldn't even tell you. There's lots of benefits.
There's a lot of benefits with there's the breath.
And I think being able to access that is super, super important.
I was going to ask you another question and then I just get kind of captivated.
Sidetracked.
Yeah. We're recording this before the new year. What advice do you have for people who gone through 2018, had some amazing goals, didn't achieve them? And how to skip that self-shaming process or that guilt that sometimes we put on ourselves within the new year of like, oh, I didn't achieve this, so how am I going to achieve anything for this new year? Or how do you help clients still see the possibility within themselves when they didn't achieve not necessarily the goal they had in mind, but maybe something else?
I feel like telling people, maybe that wasn't the goal for you.
Mm.
Like, maybe it's not you. Maybe it was the goal. Just because you didn't achieve a goal that you set out to doesn't mean that you can't achieve a different goal. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make you a bad person. Doesn't mean, you know, you are lazy or incompetent or all those things that we like to tell ourselves when we don't achieve certain goals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that just wasn't your goal. And it's okay to pivot. It's mm-hmm. okay to go in a different direction. You know, I think people have a lot of hangups around New Year's and New Year's resolutions. And, you know, like, why, like, you're creating goals all year, you're creating habits all year to help, you know, take steps forward. Like, why does it have to be in January?
Mm.
I think it is kind of like an obvious time of year to like reflect and look at things. But I think you can be setting those goals all the time and they can constantly be shifting and evolving, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, if they're not, that means you're not shifting and evolving. And mm-hmm. if that's not happening, you're not leveling up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think goals have to change. And just because you don't achieve one, like, cool, move on to the next.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that deep. You don't have, like, we make it mean all these things that like we can and cannot do and place limitations on ourselves. Mm. Like, okay, I thought my business would be in a way different place, but
mm-hmm.
not. And it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Fine. I can relate to that. It's all good. cause I'm big on dreams and like getting people to dream. Yeah. What are some of your dreams for this year and how are you going to take those like steps of actions, but also have that flexibility if some of those don't happen for you?
I love this. I love this about you. Because I think dreams and having big visions are huge. Because if we don't create big possibilities for ourselves, then you're just living super small. Big dreams for me, I have really big hopes and big visions for Ignited Women Summit. It's like just my passion, and it's where most of my learning and growing has really gone on. I really want to grow that to multiple cities, way more speakers. I want the community to grow. I just, I just have this huge vision of it being this really big, exciting event across the country that women or anybody who identifies as a woman comes together to learn and expand and evolve and grow and stop compromising pieces of who they are to achieve what they want. And just more voices, like,
I'm excited for this,
like all the things. So that's like the really big pie in the sky vision.
Yeah.
And then for my own business, I'm about to launch like an online training platform that I'm excited about, but that's, you got some logistical things to work out there.
That's too good. Okay, this is what I've been coming up with other questions, but I'm like, no, that's not it. That's not it. Where is this question? So you're huge on you're like the wolf pack for you. And that's kind of like the animal that you identify. And I know for myself, I identify a lot with more of like the humpback whales and the orcas, and that's kind of more my animal. How do you how can you help someone identify with like kind of what their animal is? Or I don't know if you do that as a coach, but I know there's that some type of connection that we all have with more of the animal kingdom. And what's the significance about connecting or feeling some type of connection to animals?
I think that animalistic side is that deep feminine. And I think identifying your deep feminine is super powerful. So whether that's a wolf, I've heard a lizard, I've heard koala, I've heard elephant, but it's identifying that deep feminine part of yourself, or even like that balance of feminine and masculine and how that like manifests. And it, to me, is like personifies this like being that is always like walking there with you. And I don't know if that's like weird or woo or whatever, but whenever I feel like I need to like drop into that like deep power, I know that like that wild nature of whatever that feminine masculine balance is somehow animalistic. And I think having tapped into that and identifying that is super powerful for you to show up fully in your power and in your body.
That was a great answer. I love that. Yeah. Now I know you have taken horse riding lessons. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh my gosh. So when I moved to Orlando through my Ignited event from last year, I had a woman come up to me and said, I have a great friend in Orlando. You need to meet her. And so we were legit just texting back and forth, trying to come up with like a coffee date
because
coffee and friends.
Yes.
And she's like, well, I can't meet on this date. I'm going horseback riding. And I was like, skirt, what? So of course me, fitness connoisseur, like trying to like try new things.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. So she hooked me up, and she was a lifelong horseback riding person. What do you call it?
Yeah.
Equestrian, like it's a huge deal down here.
Yeah.
Equestrian world. I had no idea. And so she had vetted all of these amazing stables, and I showed up and just fell in love. I mean, horses are, it's like getting on top of a magical dragon.
Oh, cool.
Oh my God. And they are just the most amazing animals. And you feel so humbled to be able to get onto the back of this amazing, magical creature. And like, I could just walk around for my lesson and be super happy. But it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, talk about like a Olympic weightlifting and like learning all the things. Like I, you know, see myself as some like athletic chick. I got off of there and was like, holy cow, my adductors and my glutes and my, like everything was sore. And there's, and those horses do what they want. Like, I'm trying to like kick them and like get them to go. And you know, they're their own creature. They sometimes don't listen.
I'm going to go back to the emotional side of things. One of my professors when I was in grad school mentioned how most people are owning smaller animals because they don't have to really address their emotional side, because our animals really reflect what's going on in our emotions. Yeah. And I can relate to that because I used to walk two Great Danes and I could tell when I was off because they weren't behaving. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, what's just that parallel between our emotional body and the animal and their emotions. How did that bring up to you with riding a horse? How much like
it was therapy. That
therapy, but how much like stable did you have to be with your emotions for that? Or did that help trying to train your emotions through that?
You have to like connect with that horse on this crazy level. I mean, talk about like breathing and your breath. I mean, I can't tell you how many deep breaths I had to take to like be grounded in my body and like connected to that saddle, because you're wrapped around this horse. And it is this amazing therapeutic experience to have to connect with that horse on this like emotional level. And you're up there and he's doing his thing and I'm trying to stay on. I definitely like, it was a hard transition for me to leave Seattle and move to Orlando. And I always tell my friends, like, it was either go see a real therapist or go to horse therapy. So I went to horse therapy twice a week and was riding, because it was this connection where they just see you. Like it's amazing how you don't have to pretend, you don't have to put on any type of front. Like you just show up and they nuzzle you and they are silly and goofy. And at least my horse was, my lesson horse was just this goofy personality. And it lightened me. It lightened my spirit. It was amazing.
That's awesome. Well, cool. Yeah. Well, we're going to be wrapping it up soon. Do you have anything else that you would like to share for the listeners? I mean, we've talked across the spectrum of everything.
Yeah, we covered a lot.
Yeah, we did.
You're a good host.
Oh, thanks. It was fun.
Now that I can think of, I feel like we've talked about so much in such a short amount of time. I just appreciate the good conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on. And for those who are listening, thank you so much. If you enjoyed this show, make sure you share your love with the 5 stars and a comment, and make sure you share this episode with some family and friends. And don't forget to subscribe so we can help build this community of being strong physically and spiritually. Other than that, we are peacing out. Thanks so much.